And this is
Good
our
morning in
good
progress.
morning.
this is our last day, last committee meeting for the year. And hoping that we are I know that we have been from a very hectic it has been a hectic year with all the challenges that have been confronting us, more and above the issue of the pandemic, and hoping that we are adhering to regulations, and not only ourselves, but we are to protect our families, but not only our families, but also the community and the citizenry of our land. And therefore, as public representatives, we are the first to lead with example in terms of adhering to non-pharmaceutical regulations. But moreover, I hope we have gone for vaccination. And those that have not, I'm humbly persuading them to do that. And we forget all the theories around vaccination. Because if we don't vaccinate, we are still going to be in a serious problem. And therefore, we have also got that responsibility of persuading our people to take the issue of vaccination very seriously. Having said that, honorable members, we have got a presentation today from the Commission of Gender Equality called CGE. We will then request Mr. Sakaza first to do the House rules, the roll call, before we... over to...
Committee Assistant, Mr. Teboho Mokoena, the researcher, Mr. Ngcobo, the committee assistant. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sakaza. Unfortunately, honorable members, which is something that I don't like, won't be able to. I'm trying to get a place where I can then be able to. You can be able to see my face. If I manage to do that, I will do so. Are there any persons from the department?
Good morning, Chair. I am in the meeting. Karabo Magagane. Mr. Thando Ababa will join the meeting as during the course of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will then, having said that, we then hand over to the CGE to take us to their presentation. We will appreciate if they can show us their faces. If then they show us their faces, we appreciate that. And I will then hand over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues. My name is Jamela Robertson. I am the CEO of the Commission for Gender Equality. I joined the commission exactly a year ago in November 2020. Today, excuse me, unfortunately, our commissioners are on hearings. The chairperson wished to join me today, but she wasn't feeling well. She's been traveling a lot, so she came back not feeling well yesterday. But she said if she feels better, she will join the meeting. So, so far, it's only myself and also our chief investigating officer who was supposed to be presenting today, Dr. Dennis Matotok. I had a family emergency. So here I am. I will try and present to Honorable Chair and members as best as I can on this presentation. Now, if I can take a few seconds to project, Honorable Chair. May I check if the presentation is visible?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Overall, Honorable Chair and members, we have submitted three presentations covering four reports. It's basically a report and its progress from, I think, 2018-19 to date. The reports are on our transformation investigations in tertiary institutions. Honorable Chair, if I may be allowed to switch off the video to save on bandwidth.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Yes, I was saying the two categories of reports, excuse me, concerns our investigation in tertiary institutions, as well as the investigations in the public and private sector. The first presentation that I'm projecting, Honorable Chair and members, is the investigation we did in 2018-19 on gender transformation in tertiary institutions. I'm trying to move this slides. My gadget is not responding. Please bear with me. I'm not sure what's happening. Okay.
Can I just try and check with the with Mr. Sakaza, if he can't assist in terms of my understanding is that you may also be the host, so that he assists you with the Mr. Sakaza, is it possible?
So
yes, I have made a co-host.
Yes, it just moved. So this is just the overview of the whole presentation. And the presentation is really very long, but some of the slides are your introductory remarks, like our mandate and so forth, and the legislative environment relating to our investigations in transformation in higher institutions. So I will try to be brief on some of these these introductory slides, including this one where we're just introducing our mandate as outlined in the Constitution, where we are mandated to monitor, evaluate policies and practices of state and pretty much all entities in South Africa, private and public. We are guided in our investigations in tertiary institutions by various regulations and conventions that South Africa is signatory to. And because the following few slides are about the legislative framework that we operate under, I will just mention the framework in brief and pass. The emphasis, I suppose, as we look at the legal framework, is that as South Africa, domestically and also regionally and internationally, we do have some really good legislative environment that we adhere to actually in every sector. There will be some law or some international declaration, declarations that we have signed that we need to adhere to. But just to emphasize that what appears to be the case as we do this investigation is that much as we have a very liberal legislative environment, we really are not doing well in terms of implementing those legislation, especially conventions like your Beijing platform, mainly regional and international instruments that seek to promote equality. Overall, progress is very gradual. And as the CGE, we feel that as a country, we could do better if we paid more attention to these legal frameworks. And also perhaps do take into cognizance that if we don't perform as we have committed to, Honorable Chair and members, all of us. Having said that, honorable members, I will get to the hearings that the CGE conducted in 2018-19 with tertiary institutions. And the universities that were, bear with me, Honorable Chair, my chairperson is calling. I think she's trying to join the meeting. I will just tell her that I am currently presenting. Chair, I'm presenting. You can't join. It's fine. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, my honorable members, the phone is silent, but it was bothering me and she's trying to join. I really apologize for taking the call like this. So we looked at four universities, which were the University of Zululand, Nelson Mandela University, Solplaki, Mpumalanga University, and we also interacted with the Department of Higher Education and Training. And with the department, what we usually do is after investigating all the sample of higher institutions that we would have selected, we go to the department, also check their environment in terms of the tools they have in place for promoting gender equality in tertiary institutions. But the second part of that, we report our findings from the tertiary institutions in terms of their performance in the sector. So the department really, we engage them at those two levels. Some of the situations that pushed us to conduct these investigations is that as we were doing work across sectors, but also in higher education, we realized that there wasn't a good understanding of gender dynamics in the workplace. And also there is, as I had said, implementation is a bit too gradual for what it could be. And those were some of the things that prompted us to look at these particular higher education institutions. Honorable members may sometimes perhaps wonder why or how we choose these institutions. Sometimes there would be complaints from higher education institutions, complaints that come to us as the CGE, because we have a system of walk-ins where individuals can come and report cases of gender discrimination, which can include gender-based violence, including sexual harassment, and so forth. So while an individual or individuals can come in and report a case, we take these cases because we know they are a microcosm of a bigger problem in the country. So as we follow up three or four or five institutions, we know that there are areas of common concern as we operate within the same patriarchal system that has shaped our mindset. So one case basically can represent a total problem in the country. So that's one of the reasons that's how we sometimes choose these tertiary institutions. Sometimes it might be something that has blown up in the media that has caught national attention, warranting us to look into an institution, and this apply in to all different sectors. So that is basically a little background on why we choose this institution. As mentioned before, the symptomatic situation where you find low levels of compliance with labor legislations, including the Employment Equity Act and Basic Conditions of Employment. These are some of the things that make us, that directs our investigations, because we know we have so much legislation that is being transgressed for a lack of a better word. I have spoken a little bit about these, honorable members, regarding some of the situations that prompt us to conduct these investigations, and some of the issues may that I perhaps didn't mention, it's the lack of transformation when it comes to LGBTI communities and persons with disabilities, not forgetting the second pandemic, which is one of the areas that we're getting a lot of reports of late around issues of gender-based violence in tertiary institutions, and honorable members will all attest to that, given the matters that we have been observing lately. One of the objectives of the hearings, of course, is to assess the impact of our employment equity legislations, as has been listed in the previous slides, including the basic conditions of employment, the Employment Equity Act, and so forth. So this legislation really, if we can see how much it impacts on transformation in a way that shows that we are making progress, that's what we are interested in as the Commission for Gender Equality. We also want to probe the internal policies, systems, and programs within these institutions, because we know that for them to be able to implement the national legislations, they need to have arrangements internally to be able to respond accordingly. Also, the hearings are used as a platform to bring light the discriminations and risk experienced by specifically women, persons with disabilities, and the LGBTI communities, basically historically disadvantaged people. We're looking out, obviously, for that as an institution that is constituted to support democracy. So, coming into the universities that we investigated, The University of Zululand, some brief findings and recommendations that were provided to the university during these investigative hearings. We found that the university did not have mechanisms to drive gender transformation, especially at the top two echelons of staff prior to the appointment of transformation manager. So they eventually did, but you still had that situation where the picture still reflected convention, where, you know, that predictable situation where right at the top is white males followed by white females, Indian males, all the way to the bottom where you find black women. So this is the picture that I personally will say it still reflects the picture of apartheid. And we know this is not something that you can do away with overnight, but 27 over a quarter of a century later, we expect to see some satisfactory movement justifying the duration that we have been implementing the legislations that we have. We recommended to the university that they should appoint a sign language practitioner to assist students with hearing impairments with interpretation during lectures. As you can imagine, honorable members, if you have this disability and you're attending a university, you're sitting in a lecture hall, you see lip movement, but you can't tell what's happening. And we know the system of accommodating people with various impairments. We also have legislation in that regard, honorable members. But again, it's something that we still need to strengthen in terms of our oversight role as the committee and us in terms of monitoring and reporting what is happening as a watchdog institution, if you like, if I can put it that way. We also recommended that university should urgently adopt the following policies. Actually, we say adopt, but basically it was also reviewing. Because sometimes in institution, in my experience, we may have gender policies, gender-based violence policies, sexual harassment policies, but these policies sometimes, much as they are labeled as such, they tend to be gender blind or gender neutral. They don't address the realities of gender inequality in the country. So these we have recommended that they look at these policies and make those improvements. And when we do this, honorable members, we don't only make recommendations, we also offer assistance to do that with some tertiary institutions and other institutions in other sectors. We have actually, our legal team has actually conducted workshops, sit with people and facilitate the development of these policies because we do recognize that much as gender equality is one of our key priorities in terms of national goals, but the reality is that in our mindset, we still really don't understand the gender dynamics. So we have that patience to educate people in that regard and also help them to actually implement some of our recommendations, particularly when it comes to issues of disaggregated data on persons with disability, also between women and men, people of different races. This is a general problem across the public and private sector, including tertiary institutions, that when you now want to look at what is the composition, whether of staff, students, or any other systems that they have in place, when it comes to data disaggregation, we still have quite some work to do in terms of trying to get to that, so that we can be able to measure when a university or says we have these numbers of beneficiaries in this transformation program. If you say we have 500 beneficiaries, so who are those beneficiaries? Data disaggregation tells us that we have so many women, we have so many men, we have so many people, black, white, colored, Indian, and so forth. So this is still a bit of a struggle. However, coming to the Nelson Mandela universities, we observed that there was some progress in respect of gender representation in academic staff since 2005, where they had 41% of women in their staff to 51% when we conducted this investigative hearings. And as we indicate, this was in favor of women. But I usually caution, having been in this sector for quite some time, I usually caution that these numbers sometimes may be deceiving. Because when we say 41% to 51% in favor of women, what we need to look at is under what categories of staff. Because the usual is that we can have 80% of women in an institution, and that 80% is at they're cleaning the floors, basically. While when you go up, then the historical picture begins to emerge when you go up into senior management or decision-making levels. So I just thought I need to highlight that, because that is what we are interested in. But I think in the actual report, honorable members, the breakdowns may be there. I familiarized myself with the reports, but I cannot say I can speak to as the investigators would in terms of the breakdown of information. And having said that, honorable members, I also, it reminds me that I must request honorable members, chair, to indulge me when there are questions that I may not have sufficient information on, to be allowed to note those questions for written responses by our legal department at a later stage, that the honorable members may give us a timeline for that. We also observed at the Nelson Mandela University that it falls short in respect of gender parity of staff members in the faculties of science, engineering, and law, which is not a surprise. Historically, this is a male-dominated industry. And in respect of this professionally qualified band, it may be raised as a red flag that more women should be recruited into this band. And given the assumption that it is the band which feeds senior management and top management. And that's what we talk about when we talk about gender equity. Usually you will find institution telling us, we can't find women here, we can't find persons with disabilities here, we can't find black people here, and so forth. But the duty of this country, our constitution, we are in the business of implementing the constitution. We keep trying to say this to institutions. So it's upon you to create systems to bring those who have been left behind historically, to bring forth. That's why we had affirmative action, the BBB, policies, and so forth. It's intended to fill, to level the playing field, that those who have been left behind historically are able to catch up, if you like, for a lack of a better word. As indicated, persons with disabilities were not very well represented. As out of 2,451, you had about 36 employees with disabilities, with females being the lowest represented, which is not surprising. Again, it's that picture that we know. And so that was one of the situations that we observed. And we recognize that the university had recently absorbed in excess of 900 previously outsourced workers, which have skewed the statistics. I mean, absorbing outsourced workers is one of the good ways of making progress. But yes, it does skew statistics, but it just tells us that we need to continue implementing equity measures so that the statistics begin to balance when it comes to transformation in these institutions. Still on the Nelson Mandela University, we commended the university on its integrated policy framework, which incorporates gender transformation into the objectives. It noted that despite them holding an extensive policy framework, there was a concern that there is inadequate flexi-time policy and child care facilities. And this, again, are some of those equity measures that we need to recognize that when it comes to women, the patriarchal system has put the burden of care on women. So we need to accommodate that so that women can be able to compete competitively and not be at disadvantage by having the burden of care that gets in the way of them participating effectively in the economy or in academia. We also found that the policies were not reviewed biannually. Usually policies will say how long, what duration it will take before they are reviewed, but the policies were not reviewed as had been committed in this university. And obviously we did encourage them to try and make sure that their policies are reviewed, because things change in this environment, especially around gender-based violence and sexual harassment and in institutions of higher learning. We get more and more reports from there. So it is crucial that policies are reviewed to respond to situations in these institutions, including, again, prioritizing security updates, because the environment cannot be allowed to be what we think it's becoming now, where tertiary institutions have become centers of some really gross violations of human rights through gender-based violence and femicide. We shouldn't have that kind of situation in this country. Solplaike University findings and recommendations, we found that women were underrepresented at the top and senior management positions, with only one woman in top management and none in senior management. So this was the classic example of no progress or undesirable progress, if you like, in terms of gender transformation. So if you have a male domination of positions at 90%, it becomes a bit worrisome. So, and the same percentages, the same picture was observed with the student representative council. We recommended that they need to increase and empower women, obviously, because here the findings were very alarming, if you like. We did elaborate that the commission elaborated that as opposed to universities carrying historical disadvantages, they need to better position themselves to start by moving away from culture and patriarchy. Apart from appointing two women in the executive team as a head of school and equivalent on a dean at other universities. So this university undertook to actually increase women representation in management to 3 women in February 2019. So as Honorable Chair and members can see, when we talk about gradual progress, that is a classic example. We also found that the university was not offering subjects to deaf and visually impaired students, and this is which is unfairly discriminating against these communities, which again it's that contravention of the law directly, if you like. And I think my observation, not necessarily perhaps in the Commission for Gender Equality, has been that as we implement the gender equality agenda in South Africa, many of us who hold the power to effect change don't understand what it is, what's the problem, people will ask. We are fine. Things have always worked well like this. And that obviously demonstrates what I indicated in the beginning, that gender dynamics are not very well understood in our country. So for me, training, awareness raising becomes very critical in this, in all sectors, actually, one can say. We recommended that the also the university must complete the ring fencing and improve the entire campus and residence in terms of security. So Plaki continued, we found that the university does not have policies on gender, HIV, AIDS, succession planning, career pathing, staff retention, all those human resource kind of policies that seek to bring people who have been left behind historically forward to benefit in this democracy as everyone else. And this kind of situation, of course, does not only transgress our own domestic laws, it also transgress regional and international laws that we are signatory to. We also observed that there was no sexual harassment policy applicable to the students, and we recommended that they develop a sexual harassment policy for students, because, again, this is another area where, as Honorable Chair and Honorable Members may have observed in some of the latest cases in the country, where things get complicated when it comes to definitions of what exactly is sexual harassment or what is rape, what are the preconditions to say this was rape. So if a university or any institution does not have a policy that is clear what is not acceptable around these problematic areas, the situation just fuels itself without any prevention being implemented in the institution. We also found that there were no programs in place to support victims of gender-based violence and discourage the possible withdrawal of cases. And we recommended that they need to have these policies developed, especially currently with the scourge of gender-based violence. Bear with me, Honorable Chair. I keep sipping water and go silent, so don't be alarmed. The University of Mpumalanga, we observed that they had appointed an executive director who forms part of management, as a gender transformation manager. The commission, we recommended that a senior manager be appointed for implementing the employment equity plan to ensure that the institution is transformed against a culture of patriarchy, which is a common feature across institutions. And one obviously can emphasize that not only of higher education, but all institutions in general. It's a system that has been there for as long as we have existed. So it's something that we gradually have to dismantle, if you like, in terms of how it disadvantages certain groups of people in our society. It should implement a new generation of academic programs to recruit females, because again, in Mpumalanga, it's like you see that effort being made in this regard. We also recommended that they must institute strict measures such as dialogues, workshops, campaigns to sensitize the university community on policies such as sexual harassment, the disciplinary code of staff and students, and they must also develop the policies as listed there, because and in developing these policies, obviously, they need to mainstream gender, so to speak, in these policies, so that they are gender responsive, they are gender sensitive. It's not just a policy for the sake of having the policy. Then coming to the last institution, which was the department itself, we felt that international standards need to be maintained in education, and therefore the department must lead in the conversation of foreign influx in academia. That is, it must initiate a dialogue on the African diaspora. We do we are familiar with the issues of foreign citizens in South Africa, and the institutions of higher education are part of that problem. And the department obviously need to lead in terms of how to manage or to contain that kind of problem. Also to train its cohort in respect of disabilities and to retain women for higher positions. We indicated that they must have a policy addressing gender equality and equity in higher education. And I think since this investigation, so much has happened. We were presenting to the Portfolio Committee of Higher Education a week or so ago, and the department was also there to present, and it was apparent that a lot of the commission's recommendations were implemented, which is highlighted in our progress report, the follow-up hearings that were submitted, honorable members. It shows that the department, much as the institutions are not progressing very well, but the department has responded relatively well in our recommendations, including recommendations that came out of the IRAP report, the 6 months emergency and grievance policies be conducted with staff members and students. So the grievance policy also need to outline how you go about if you find yourself in this kind of situation. We also said they must build strong relations with SAPs to address gender-based violence, and this is very crucial because at least this partnership will bring some kind of confidence amongst those who become victims or even perpetrators, because on one hand, you don't want just to address the victim. You need to address both the victim and the perpetrators. So programs need to be in place, really, instead of letting perpetrators go scot-free after violations of rights. We recommend that these partnerships must happen to strengthen our programs. And obviously, we have recommended various policies to be developed in relation to promote, you know, getting women into senior and top management in the university. In some of the universities that we observed, they had introduced the CCTV footage that was in terms of security issues. Some of them, the sexual harassment policies were extended to even protect contractors who come into the campus, not only protect, but also inform them. So both the perpetrators and the likely victims of these issues to also be affected. So as soon as you walk into an institution, you are bound by its policies, including even whistleblower policies, where whistleblowers need to be protected. So in conclusion, honorable members, on this presentation, we observe that the Department of Higher Education released a policy framework to address gender-based violence in institutions of higher learning. And this is now on the follow-up, as I was indicating previously, that they presented to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education. They had implemented the recommendations of the CGE that were made in the initial study. Although the policy framework was aimed at combating gender-based violence and other challenging patriarchal practices in South Africa, it also served as a guide to address all forms of GBV in the post-school education and training system. So the policy, you know, aims to be all-encompassing, so to speak. A few institutions of higher learning have improved on recruitment of female candidates, as has been indicated. We only had, I think, the Nelson Mandela and Sol Plaatje that were still really not progressing in a way that was interesting, but the other two showed some really good levels of progress in terms of the recommendations that were made to them. And we have some have improved in terms of recruiting females and persons with disabilities, but some still need, I would call it, they need some hand holding to actually implement the recommendation. And one can say perhaps you do have that unwillingness, because people perceive gender transformation as an extra area of work that is adding to their job description. And what we are trying to inculcate is that, you know, mainstreaming gender means working smarter, because now you're bringing the whole human capital of the country into the fore to participate in the economy equally. Whereas when we discriminate on the basis of gender, race, and so forth, we're locking away the majority of the human capital that we have, which has a detrimental effect to our economy, because we're limiting production in this area. So these issues are not simply promoting gender equality for the sake of it, but they have big implications in terms of how we thrive as a country. I thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Members, I think that is, I just want to maybe to suggest a process that we get the next presentation, so that we when we ask questions of clarity, we will ask questions of clarity from all the presentations that have been made. Would that be fine? Because my understanding is that this was about tertiary, and there is another presentation on private and public. Am I correct, Ms. Chairman? Ms. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Members, will it be fine that we get the next presentation and then ask the questions of clarity from the whole package of presentations? Can I get that indication if members are okay with that approach?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Can you please present this?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just projecting it. Hey, hey, hey. There we go. Sorry. Honorable Chair, please bear with me. I will. May I check if it's projecting?
Yes, it is, ma'am.
Thank you. The next presentation is on gender transformation in the public and private sector that was conducted in the financial year 2019-20. The presentation takes pretty much a similar approach as the previous presentation, starting with our mandate as articulated or outlined previously. So, Honorable Chair, I'll also skip these slides quickly, as it's the same information around our mandate, also the legal frameworks that informs these investigations in the public and private sector, including CEDAW with its articles, where the of course, discrimination of women is one of the key areas that the CEDAW addressed, in terms of how not to discriminate against women, because that focuses mainly on gender, though it does affect other grounds of discrimination. So these are just some of the articles in the convention. The oldest Universal Declaration of Human Rights informs that our Sustainable Development Goals, the Vienna Declaration of 1993, Beijing, as one of the strongest in terms of directives of how we can promote gender equality. The addendum to the 1997 Declaration on Gender and Development, this is one of our SADC instruments. And locally or domestically, obviously, as I said, we have our constitution as the supreme law, and it does highlight in detail on the rights that cannot be derogated as we try and implement the transformation agenda of the country. Coming to the hearings in the public and private sector that were conducted in Johannesburg in 2019, four entities were subpoenaed to appear before the commission. An account on their compliance, again, is the similar legislation, your Employment Equity Act, your Basic Conditions of Employment, your Labor Relations Act, and so forth. And the institutions that we called to account were the Vodacom, Woolworths, the COPTA, and the Department of Justice. So there were two public institutions and two private institutions. And in terms of the methodology, suffice to say, we send a questionnaire and requesting, we're asking questions as well as requesting information. And we do a qualitative and quantitative studies or investigations, in a sense that once we have sent the questionnaire requesting information, asking questions, when they submit the documents, the legal team sit and scrutinize those documents to see if what is being reported actually is happening. So for instance, if an institution say we have 40% women in our decision-making structures, we do request the kind of information, including payroll in some instances, that will show us that what is being reported actually is the reality. And again, as with higher education institutions, as I have mentioned, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you do get that a lack of understanding, if you want, in terms of gender dynamics and also the slow pace of transformations. Again, it's the same kind of picture where women, persons with disabilities, and also LGBTI communities are underrepresented in top or senior management and middle management, for that matter, in this case, in some of these entities. But we will get into the individual cases, entities, as we continue in the presentation. One of the concerning issues is the underreporting of sexual harassment cases, which basically, if the environment is not conducive, you will have this kind of situation, because either victims fear to be re-victimized, as we have seen in some cases, when you report this, you become the bad guy instead of the perpetrators. And in some institution, you find that victims are isolated while perpetrators enjoy their basic human rights and are free to roam around, simply because systems are not adequate to address those kinds of situations. And mention just again to emphasize that in all this, as it happens, we are actually breaking our own laws that we put in place after 1994. So in terms of the hearings, we decided to place special focus in the private and public sector, because again, for the same reasons that transformation was just too gradual for what we believe should have happened about 27 years later into democracy. And this involved looking at their sexual harassment cases that were lodged with the commission. The slow transformation around LGBTI communities, the placement of women with disabilities, and buildings that are not conducive or accommodative. We do know that the DPSA has a very extensive strategy for the country that outlines how a reasonable accommodation should be implemented, but we are again seeing some kind of a slowness in that system, and obviously all different kinds of reasons are being cited in that regard. So our key objective in this hearing was again to assess that impact, if our laws are having any impact at any way that can be observed through our public and private institutions. Again, to also look at the kind of policies and systems programs that they have internally to operationalize these laws, and also to raise awareness basically around gender discriminations and the risks experienced by women and all other historically marginalized people. Starting with Vodacom, we found that white males still dominated at top and senior management positions. There were, which means obviously that there was an underrepresentation of women generally in managerial positions. The entity created an enabling environment for the needs and challenges of women and persons with disabilities. So there were some interventions that were put in place in this regard to create an enabling environment. We found that more men were promoted than women in various occupational levels since 2017. The adoption of a flexi working hours and establishment of medical units for women employees is what they regard, and we also observed was best practice in terms of Vodacom. The gender mainstreaming is prioritized through the adoption of gender-related policies and practices, such as code like a girl, interventions of gender-neutral bathrooms, including various trainings. However, it was found that some of the policies are not actually are gender-neutral. My apologies. With that, it should be they are gender neutral. And this is common because here is where people struggle when it comes to mainstreaming gender. Sometimes just putting gender in a document for some people, they feel it's sufficient. And people who are specialists in this area, this is where we encourage them to get these people to assist in terms of actually developing gender responsive policies. There was also a disproportionate investment in women, for example, in programs it offers in conjunction with the Gordon Institute of Business Science, the GIBS program. But it is important that once the pool for talent is created, measures should be adopted to ensure that there is upward mobility for women. So basically, while we point out some weaknesses, Vodacom also showed some kind of progress in some areas of their workplace environment. We recommended that they should increase the representation of women. Engagement should be conducted between the CGE and Vodacom on sexual harassment by March 2020. And the progress in this regard obviously will show that some of these things have happened. They should also assess organizational culture and how it affects women and accordingly develop a culture change strategy. Most of us in our institution have that task of trying and address the issues of patriarchy. Which manifest in through our cultural practices and other beliefs. In terms of progress, the Vodacom submitted that the information and technology sector in both emerging and first world countries is dominated by male, that we all know, more especially engineering and technology side of business. However, the entity was making serious strides to address this imbalance by introducing several pioneering programs to ensure that women emerge as leaders. They also considered that the representation of women remain a challenge for its business and the broader telecom sector as usual. And in South Africa, women accounted at that stage for about 43% of the workforce, with 34% at senior management level against the target of 36%, which is not too bad given the circumstances of slow progress within which we operate currently. Vodacom also submitted that top management there has been an improvement in the presentation of African people the entity commits to fully exploit the employment equity drivers, appointments, promotions, and so forth to facilitate progress. And one can also actually outside this investigation, in other follow-up hearings, we have found that Vodacom was one of the private entities that was the most responsive to the recommendations of the CGE. The Harvard Senior Executive Program and Women in Leadership. So these are just some of the programs that they have put in place in response to our recommendations. In terms of engagements with on the sexual harassment, the said engagement did not happen due to COVID-19. This is one of the hearings that we had to postpone at that stage because of the lockdown level. However, we were satisfied that the video clips that were used by Vodacom on sexual harassment was comprehensive in terms of addressing some of the issues that we had raised. Basically, what this is, when a hearing couldn't happen, we don't leave it there. We use other modes of getting information. And we found that they have instituted these awareness-raising videos and so forth in the company for staff to observe, you know, throughout the day. We know all those kind of television screens that are playing in some offices. Organizational culture. They did, of course, concede to the fact that they need to shift some ideologies in the company. In 2020, they launched the spirit of Vodacom and articulated the connection between its purpose, strategy, and spirit. So this was another launch that they made called the Big Convention that was attended by 259 employees across the market. The survey will occur in 6 months. That was the report that they provided in terms of following up after the big conversation that they had initiated. So as I indicated, they actually responded very well in terms of progress in this regard. In terms of HR policy, they updated their policy to include gender-neutral language. And some of this pertains to situations where literature or written documents personifies human beings as a he. So everyone is a he. It might sound like it's a harmless situation, but believe you me, that's why we are here today. Because that's where the sense of inferiority and superiority come from when certain situations in life are personified as typically male or typically white or typically anything that has privilege, that we have assigned privilege, becomes a representative for all human beings. So these semantics are in themselves very important when it comes to our language. Some of the improvements that they have made included flexible working arrangement, maternity benefits, parental leave. They offer all their employees 16 weeks of fully paid parental leave, which is quite a leap from what we observe in other institutions. Coming to Woolworths, in Woolworths, the positions were occupied predominantly by white males, obviously meaning women are underrepresented in this company. Women are overrepresented in middle management downwards, which is what I had indicated earlier about scrutinizing statistics. 50-50 doesn't always mean the 50-50 that the country has in mind. when it says 50-50. We're talking about access to economy, to opportunities and resources, so to speak, not to have a 50-50 where the other 50 is mopping floors and the other 50 is sitting in decision-making positions. We found that sexual harassment cases were finalized expeditiously with maximum sanctions imposed, which for us was a plus. It's good to go into an institution and observe some of this. As Honorable Chair and Honorable Members may perhaps already see, you find that institutions, there are areas where they're not doing very well at all, and there are institutions, and there are areas maybe where they may excel, as in Woolworths in this regard when it comes to sexual harassment. Although they don't have breastfeeding rooms, or well, they don't accommodate mothers, so to speak. But this is also common in many other institutions. Suffice to say, these are some of the areas that we're pushing for transformation to help to happen. They have developed a new blueprint for new stores to include facilities for persons with disabilities. So this is some of the findings that we saw when we followed up. They also introduced a gender-based violence task team to assist with social trauma that employees deal with, obviously, after the effect of violation. The maternity and uniform policy unfairly discriminates against LGBTQI persons. We know that often in different institutions, uniforms are standard for you know, it takes society as a homogeneous group. So women wear this, men wear this. It doesn't take into account that as human beings, we have different dispositions, our rights as in terms of how we identify ourselves should not be compromised when it comes to what we wear, what we eat, and so forth. But as a country, we're still gradually responding to that, because I do know that there are entities where they have even responded to the kind of uniforms that they prescribe for their employees. They also had a grievance policy, which they have a discretion to decide on formal or informal procedure when dealing with complaints. Because as people, we know the situation where someone might say, I just want this to go away without making a big deal, whatever the situation is. So the people are allowed to do that so that they report these issues with some sense of comfort, so to speak, that they are being heard without being stigmatized. The increasing of representation of African women and persons with disabilities, the segregation of data, as disaggregation actually of data regarding the budget spent on individual employees, tracking spending per race and gender. And this talks to issues of gender responsive budgeting. So it's a challenge. And one of the main challenges is understanding what gender responsive budgeting is in the first place. So this is one area where both public and private sectors are struggling. And this is an area that now, as the commission, We conduct research, we monitor this. Every year we have an APP indicator where we monitor the implementation of gender responsive planning as per the Department of Women's framework. They should also, in terms of our recommendation, review all their policies and conduct training to all employees on the newly introduced and amended policies I reported earlier by March 2021, and the report obviously the coming for this financial the previous financial year was also reported with progress in this regard. They also need to provide action plans to deal with identified barriers in implementing these policies that they have put in place, because as indicated earlier, it's one thing developing a policy or a law, and it's another thing to implement it. Also, a plan to create a breastfeeding rooms, or basically a work environment that accommodate the needs of mothers. Also, to consult with us on its plans on gender-based violence, and this is one of those institutions. Hello?
Continue, members, please, can I request that everybody who is in this platform to mute when the speaker is making presentations, because it disturbs the presenter. You may continue, ma'am. Thank you for that.
It's okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Continuing with our progress report and on the findings and recommendations, in terms of reviewing the policies, the entity established a task team of functional experts to conduct a detailed review of its policies and procedures to ensure gender equality and that broader gender transformation is not compromised, although COVID has slowed down some of this progress. But I think for us as the commission, what really gives us job satisfaction is to see companies responding positively, because we do know in reality our area of work has a lot of white elephants, if you like, areas that are not clear for many of us in terms of how to intervene. Hence, from a personal perspective, like I said, education and supporting these institutions is very key, but also key for us is the fact that they respond to our recommendation, as opposed to those who would, for lack of a better word, would drag their feet in terms of our recommendations, and perhaps thinking it's not something that they should dwell on, is not important, not understanding the impact of doing that in not only in individual people's lives and the derogation of their rights, but also in top management excellence and decision making posts, they had committed to persons with disabilities, also LGBTI, I must add, the senior management is obviously predominantly male, and the department does not have an employment equity manager as required by Section 20 of the Employment Equity Act. And this is where I say we unwittingly break our own laws, because we are sometimes unable to see the connection between these laws and the country's transformation agenda. continuing with the Department of Cooperative Governance, the department did not have a gender responsive budget. Again, this talks to that situation where we say, when you want to see how budget is allocated to interventions, you don't find any disaggregated data that shows that the budget is allocated in a manner that is responsive to the realities of gender inequality in the country. So we really did not observe that with the department. Also with childcare facilities and flexi time, also with succession planning and retention of employees, policies to deal with issues of specific reference to gender, disability or LGBTI. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I'm sure you can see the kind of response that we got from the department, and that they don't take into cognizance of Black people living in rural areas in its procurement practices and women-owned businesses typically receive tenders amounting to 50,000 and below. And this, for me, when I saw it, it wasn't strange because I have seen this before many, many years. So women will be procured around issues of catering, 5,000 here, 2,000 there. The higher you go with the tenders, the higher you see the picture of apartheid. When it comes to millions, then you begin to see males, whites, and then and so forth. History can justify some of this, and justifying doesn't mean it's good, but can explain why we still have that picture. What matters for us is when our respondents don't seem to see that as something that as a country we need to address, as in yesterday, because this is what we fought for. This is what this democracy was all about. So we need to really take this seriously instead of seeing this as, in many situations, gender issues become lip service. And we really need to transcend that and begin to see how this impacts on the country at large. Some of the recommendation was that we need to meet with the minister by March 2021 to discuss the lack of gender transformation. And again, here, I if there's a question, I can make a note to check if this meeting did take place. We also required quarterly reports on targets set by the department. As you can see, we don't usually request quarterly reports from entities. We follow up annually. But when the condition is like this, this is where you really become interested as the commission to say, we really want to see what is happening here. And if we perhaps increase the frequency of the reports we request, maybe we will see some kind of progress. Again, around issues of culture that we recommended they should conduct a culture survey regarding work satisfaction, sexual harassment, wellness, and other issues, including LGBTI and disabilities. The department should also develop and provide a plan for CGE aimed at creating a working environment that is conducive for persons with different forms of disabilities. So similar to what had happened with Vodacom, where you want to see what are their plans to actually change the situation as we had found it when we were doing this investigative hearing. They should also appoint a designated employment equity manager, also look into issues of gender responsive budgeting, which may include starting with some kind of capacity building in this area, because in reality, we do have that situation where as public servants, we don't have a good understanding of what it is that is required when we talk about gender responsive budgeting. The feasibility studies on child care facilities, the sexual harassment workshops. These are some of the common recommendations that we make to institutions because we find that they are very silent when it comes to these issues. They must also develop a succession plan. So basically all the findings that we have made, we had made recommendations for them to change the situation. And also issues of procurement for rural women and rural people in general, and also conducting their workshops. They're still on cooperative governance. In terms of their failure to demonstrate commitment to transformation, they submitted that this is due to constraints in compensation of employees' budgets. Therefore, it's unable to meet government-wide transformation targets. And again, we are cognizant of the fact that there are budget limitations in pretty much all institutions, but we have seen institutions with lesser budgets doing better. So the willingness part, sometimes the lack of knowledge on gender dynamics manifests through that willingness, because the more you know, the more you want to change. But the more you think things are okay, the more you don't see the need to change anything. And every time we do have all kinds of compelling explanations why we cannot change. Again, the issue of persons with disabilities being represented in senior management posts was one of the situations that we emphasized at the department. The reasonable accommodation as indicated, the gender representations in senior management posts, the employment equity manager and the gender responsive budgeting, all these recommendations so far. One can isolate the two meetings that were supposed to happen with the commission and find information if those had really happened, and perhaps we'll be able to provide written responses to the committee should that be required. In terms of child care and flexi time, they submitted that it will conduct a feasibility study. And remember this, we had recommended initially, but here you find a response that say we will do it. There was still no succession and retention plan. And Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, maybe to try and expedite the presentation, because the findings are so common that one may sound repetitive at some stage, but suffice to indicate that, as Honorable Chair and Members can see, the findings from the Department of Cooperative Governance were not very encouraging at all, and we follow up. Although we stagger institutions as we go, this report was followed up, but obviously some more follow-up progress report will need to be done specifically in this department to see how far they are going. But eventually, the department were also were provided, amongst others, these policies as indicated in the list. but these honorable members will note that are your mandatory instruments in workplaces. And as I indicated before, sometimes we develop them to tick that we've done this, but implementation, it's another story at all. The Department of Justice, again, we found a common finding where Black women are underrepresented at senior management positions. The current sexual offences court model does not make provision for breastfeeding. And this is a serious condition because we know that sexual offences courts cater in the majority for women who have been violated. And obviously, these are people who are in the care of children and babies. So you would imagine that that kind of environment would take this into account, especially because in different cultures, breastfeeding, some cultures see it as offensive when it happens in public. Some cultures, some of us were fine, you breastfeed wherever you are. So these are some of the sensitive areas that can affect people in a detrimental way if not addressed. And it may even affect the proceedings of the case, if you like. the likelihood of underreporting is common pretty much everywhere for reasons that we are familiar with. When the environment is not conducive for this, some people just die with their problem, keeping it inside, scared to report, and so forth. So this is one of those environments where some really improvements need to happen, especially for this department as one of the custodians of our legislative reform, if you like, in the country. The issue of including people in rural areas, again, other marginalized groups. We commended, however, the department for ensuring that its constitutional and educational material is available in Braille. And the mere fact that they had the material was very good, but then availing it in Braille was also a good start in terms of accommodating persons with disabilities. The lack of skill transfer programs and recognition of prior learning, which directly impact on succession and experience planning. So here is an area that needs improvement. Also the area of flexi time and child care facilities. The representation of Black women, persons with disabilities, it's another recommendation as indicated in the finding that this is something they need to deal with. Also issues of breastfeeding rooms, the delays in handling sexual harassment cases should be addressed. And Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I believe you will be very aware of this situation in the country, that victims of sexual harassment and gender-based violence feel very re-victimized, and we're working in a situation where our society needs to gain some confidence in our justice system as it keeps being reported sometimes in the media. Conducting a culture survey was also recommended to establish a view on work satisfaction, including issues of sexual harassment and other gender discrimination related issues. and that partnership that we talked about earlier when we were talking to tertiary institutions, institution in terms of partnering with strategic partners to be able to mobilize resources to address some of the challenges that institutions are experiencing, especially around issues of budget in this regard. Also, actually, departments like the DPME in terms of monitoring and evaluation of some of these interventions that are being implemented by the department, some of it could have happened because I know the department also presented to the portfolio committee on higher education a few weeks ago, and it did emerge that some of the their interventions were responding to some of the CGE recommendations. So in terms of progress around the representation of Black women at senior management, they conducted a workforce analysis in February, which was in preparation to review the employment equity plan, which expired on 30 June 2020. So here, at least as we follow up, we see some progress in terms of the recommendation. And from where I'm sitting, I don't know if I'm being too optimistic, but I think the department had progressed since our initial observations. And the economically active population target as provided by State SA, this is some of the baseline information that the department needs to use when they implement their interventions. And Stats SA is really good in terms of providing baseline statistics. So when you intervene, you know where you're starting from in terms of your own workforce, so to speak. Progress made as 31 January. So this is the current report that we have submitted. It indicated an increase of about 2% of African women in senior management. Slow progress, but progress nevertheless. That is by February 2020, African women in senior management positions were at 28%, but then on our follow-up, it increased to 29.9 in January 2021, as we were finalizing this report that we are presenting to the committee, to the portfolio committee. The department also submitted that in terms of breastfeeding room, and sexual offensive cost model was established with the objective to create a victim-friendly environment where a victim cannot suffer secondary victimization. Maybe to also cite that the department had issued three bills, gender-based violence and femicide-related bills that we different institutions made input into. I think some of them have been passed by Parliament by now. So they also envisaged that in the past financial year, a pilot will be initiated and conducted. Regrettably, with the outbreak of COVID, the exercise could not be put in place as planned. So this came out of our follow-up hearings. In terms of delays in handling sexual harassment cases, the department asserted that it is currently implementing sexual harassment policy, which was revised in 2015. And as members can, honorable members can imagine, it is obvious that a policy that was revised in 2015 needs revisions to accommodate the current experiences that we are seeing in the country even though the policy was benchmarked and aligned to the DPSA. Our lives in the country are evolving on a daily basis when it comes to issues of gender-based violence, including sexual violence. There were a few factors that were attributed to the delays in handling the cases, which included the postponements owing to sick leave by either presiding officer or witnesses. And in the era of COVID, we know that this happens. We have come across instances where you have an appointment and then you can't because a person in that entity tested positive, they closed up, all those kinds of situations. So these are some of the things that have, they are a reality in terms of some of the hindrances as people try to implement their interventions. In terms of underreporting, the department considered that there is that possibility and therefore commits to continue with sexual harassment training awareness sessions. And also they appointed a highly skilled, trained and experienced official to deal and investigate the cases, which includes, I must add, that also working on making the environment conducive so that people who experience these harassments don't get re-stigmatized when they report. They also deepened cooperations with stakeholders and labor relation experts regarding the training of employees. In terms of the exclusion of people from rural areas and persons with disabilities, the department is convinced that a considerable share of its procurement expenditure benefited service providers in rural communities, particularly from its request for quotations processes. But this is good, but one would want to see evidence for that, and one can say the report would expand on this if evidence for this claim was submitted. Also, the request for a quotation process is decentralized to all business units, including magistrates' offices. This is one approach that helps in terms of reaching local people or suppliers in particular areas in our geographic spread. In terms of skills transfer, the department indicated that the inception of human resource development strategy since August 2018 has leveled the ground through its four pillars to encourage public-private partnerships in implementing skills programs and the recognition of prior learning, because that was another finding that we had made. And through its training arm, the Justice College developed the management skills development foundation project management and women in middle management development program to equip lower level employees for management positions. So there are some of the recommendations being implemented. In conclusion, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as a Commission, we are encouraged by the private and public sector willingness and commitment to transform. And this statement is put forward in consideration of some of the negative findings that we have made. But overall, for us as an institution, I suppose, given the slow development in gender transformation, we have come to a place where we celebrate every little achievement. Hence, we are encouraged and we continue to encourage institutions to continue implementing their interventions in response to the laws of the countries and our international commitments. the Cooperative Governance Department have made a commitment to appoint an EE manager and the allocation of gender responsive budgeting. However, it's a concern that there are no time frames. And again, this reflects that perceived unwillingness that the commission has observed. So we can say we will do something, but if there are no commitments, there are no targets, there are no time frames, you know, it's something that we don't necessarily admire, for lack of a better word. We also noted that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development had put measures in place to address gender equality and transformation. And may I add, perhaps from the previous slide, that Woolworths was also showed some willingness to implement the recommendations that were not implemented by the time this follow-up was made. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members and colleagues.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you very much. Honorable members, there is the report. Any questions?
I do. Thank you, Michael Bagran.
And I check hands that are, but we must also make Honorable Inanna, Honorable Nkondo, Honorable Bagram, Honorable Inanna, Honorable Nkondo. I heard somebody talking. Okay, those are the three hands, Honorable Bagram, Honorable Inanna, Honorable Nkondo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I go ahead?
Yes, please. And may members switch off their mics, please. Those that are not active. And the presenter also, can she please switch off her mic? Yes. All right. Yes, Honorable Bagram.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the report. I wasn't able to digest everything. It was a long report, but thank you nonetheless. Just a couple of comments, and maybe we can get some feedback on it. First of all, it's been reported that the public service has only got about less than 1% disability, when we know that the disabled in South Africa is close to 6%. And we also know that the previous Minister of Employment and Labour, Minister Olifant, had said that the public service was going to reach 3%. This was about 7 years ago, and yet we're still languishing below 1%. And maybe there's some comment on that, because we should be able to work with government at least, who can be at least a forerunner to the private sector. The second thing is that the private sector seems to, the companies that they went into, seems to have done better than government, which is a turn up for the books. But what I'm really interested in is the fact that small business, it's going to be impossible. I mean, take the average spaza shop. How do they have the facilities and the ability to do all this when businesses are struggling so much? Is there any possibility of somehow looking at differentiated targets for small business as opposed to big business, and especially small business in previously disadvantaged areas? To my mind, that creates a real problem. And then the final question is, as the workforce is shrinking, and we know that it's shrinking, we get the quarterly reports for the last 10 years, every quarter the workforce is shrinking, how does one actually start reflecting the demographics of disabled, of women, etc.? So thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkondo.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you. Chair, you will forgive me. I'm having a flu. I hope I will be audible enough. Good morning to you, Chair, Honorable Members, and our guests. Chair, we welcome the presentation The questions that I have, Chair, will be accompanied with comments. The first question on tertiary institutions is that how frequent are they expected to report on a progress of their gender equity transformation? And to check if in their staff complement, if they do have maybe gender equality coordinators or units or any other structures that can help in the constant workshops and awareness campaigns that the presenter talked about. Chair, with COCTA, it's very worrying because COCTA is responsible for making sure that other institutions are transformed. For example, SALCA, municipalities, traditional authorities. Maybe the presenter can tell us as to, as seemingly COCTA is failing or the progress is very low for them to transform, then the other institutions that are under them, how are they faring? And to comment, Chair, that we see progress in the private companies that have been visited, but still the issue of women at top management, particularly Black women or women of color at top management, is still a struggle, Chair. And the people with disability, both in the private and public institutions, in the tertiary institutions, we still have a long way to go. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Inanna.
Thank you, Chair, and also welcome the presentation and good morning to the colleagues and officials. Chairperson, there is a number of issues that I wanted to raise and to get a clarity on. Is about the whole presentation is about gender parity and the sexual harassment, including other policies. But my interest is that does CEG Commission have any interaction with institutions like churches and traditional leaders under the auspices of Contralesa in this case? Because churches are some of the very, very profound institutions, but yet they practice this gender insensitivity of not recognizing the contribution of women. Because all the most 90% of the churches are being led by males. And yet in those churches, there is a lot of sexual harassment, gender insensitivities, and some of those leaders are in court as we speak because they continue and practice this sexual harassment. Now my question is, does when we want to instill these policies of gender parity and sexual harassment, do you engage and invent and in
Somebody's gone mute. I can't hear.
No, I think he has been affected by can you unmute yourself, Honorable Inan? Honorable Inanna?
I'm muted. Yes, I'm unmuted.
You
thank you, Honorable Inanna. I can hear you.
You can hear now.
Yes, Honorable.
Another time you can hear.
Yes, Honorable.
Okay. 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 I was seeing this. Can I continue, Chairperson?
Yes, you may, Ms. Honorable Inan.
Okay. I'm saying that, Chairperson, one of the issues that the presentation was made was that in the rural areas, this is where this gender parity and sexual harassment is happening. Is the institutions of traditions and culture like the controllers are being ever engaged so that these issues that were raised are being dealt with. And we must understand, Chairperson, that when we talk of the institutions of learning, those scholars are coming from communities where these practices of ill discipline against the learners are happening. Now, that's why I'm saying that this institution, Deb Home, being intervened and approached so that they can have their contribution. Chairperson, one of issues I think I need to get the clarity on, as maybe as a comment, is that are women in South Africa being educated in terms of participation in all these institutions so that they enhance the contribution of women? Because we're having very vocal women in our country, but when it comes to get the recognition of their leadership skills, they are not being recognized. You can go to politics, political parties. The politicians have been there for a very, very, very long time. But where are the women leaders? Why is it something that is being thrown upon that we can never have a woman to lead this political organization? And the last point is that the education as well that I want to be conducted is to supporting the women by saying women must never see something wrong with other women, because the majority of the problems that are happening, women don't support each other. Instead, rather support a male or another to support a woman, but the woman does have the qualities to lead. Are you conducting any public education where you invite the women to say that, do recognize that amongst yourselves, there are people capable leaders? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Inana. Honorable Nonsele.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks. Good morning to Honorable members, and good morning to CGE CEO and her team. Chair, thanks for the presentation by the CGE. The reports are quite precise and very much to the point. The question, therefore, that I want to raise is, in fact, twofold, because there are quite a number of disturbing observations with regard to findings made against the public institutions, that is the Department of Justice and the Correctional Services and also the COCTA. The question is whether, for instance, these reports or the level of engagement has been just at the level of officials, that is the DGs, or whether the political offices have also been made aware about these outcomes, including where possible also to share with the various oversight structures, that is of the respective departments. So it's a bit of a interrelated question, whether, for instance, these have been escalated to that level, that is at political level, and what, if so, what has been their responses? The reason, Chair, why I'm raising this question is that as the employment and labor, obviously we will not be just receiving these reports. There would need to be some kind of steps that are taken that need to ensure that at our next round of engagement with CGE, we in fact are able to count a visible progress that has been made in the various areas where there's been really serious omissions on the part of the named departments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Myself, in appreciating the report, which is quite empowering, shocking at other levels, really taken by surprise, I would want to get clarity on a matter which I think I may have understood you well, and if I haven't, you will then have to correct me, that you conducted these inspections or interactions on the basis of complaints that you have received. I'm raising that because, in particular, in tertiary sector, tertiary education sector, if you are talking about transformation, there are institutions that are to be ready to be visited to check if they are taking transformation seriously. And those institutions are institutions, in my view, that have then been what? Institutions under the previous regime that were more focusing and in a particular ideological trend. And those institutions, two in the Western Cape, which is University of Stellenbosch and University of Cape Town, and one which is the University of Free State. Well, that's, you can, but these three, don't you think that in moving forward, because when you talk about transformation, it's a very challenging struggle in our country and in the world. Let's talk about our country, the issue of transformation, in particular in the education sector. Coupled with that, don't you think that it will also be important to also check how far is transformation in the former model schools within the portfolio of basic education? Because I'm excited, ma'am, but I'm also a bit not quite sure whether you are really going where it is there. Because when we talk about transformation, that is what we are to do. The second clarity is that in all the issues that have been raised, sexual harassment, GBV, whatever, the basic conditions, employment equity, you have not elevated, and I want to check why. You have not elevated the issue of racism in the country and in our workplaces. Is it only outside the workplaces? Because it's also part of the transformation. It constitutes part of the challenges that we are to ensure that we transform this country. Because if we are going to, we are committing and committed in ensuring that the country is transformed, there are areas that we must now, in this 25 years, we must not keep quiet about them. The last one for me, I'm happy that you raised the issue of recognition of prior learning. Is it because it was also raised by that institution? Don't you think that it would have been proper that even yourselves, both in private and public, even also in tertiary sector, tertiary education sector, that that issue of prior, of recognition of prior learning is also elevated. I would have appreciated if maybe in your, before the conclusion, those issues are being raised, because they are, in other areas it's silent, but there's only one company, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know whether it's Woolworths or it's Vodacom, that you have then spoken about recognition of prior learning. So that those are, but thank you very much. It's a presentation that is an eye opener, but it provokes us, some of us, to ask these questions, because transformation is a struggle, but it's a very difficult struggle, and it needs us not to be apologetic, because it's not really about us, but it's about the benefit of the future generation and the current generation, in particular the young people. So those will be my comments and questions. Thank you very much. We'll allow. I heard you saying there are questions that you will request that you be allowed to have a written response, because some of the people who will have to respond on those, on some of the questions, are not part of the meeting. You requested that, which I don't think we'll have a problem with that, but I do think that there are questions, there are comments that you need to at least to respond on them as the CEO of CGE. Thank you very much. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. May Honorable Chair allow me to start on the tail end and go and proceed to the first question. Just quickly, perhaps around the issue of written responses. As I was presenting, there were two areas that said certain meetings were supposed to happen between the CGE, I think is the Department of Justice, and another institution. So, and as I was presenting that, I was wondering if they did happen. So those were the two where I requested, I will ask the department, our legal department, to update. It might just have happened. I'm just not sure at this stage. But that's what I wanted to come back with, should that be the case. But I can still submit that update once I've discussed with my team at the legal department. Honorable Chair, moving up to the question around recognition of prior learning. I think this is somewhat related with the issue of racism. We found the issue of recognition of prior learning in one of the institutions that were recognizing that mainly Black people who have years and years of experiences in different categories of work are not able to get into higher positions because obviously historical reasons, and sometimes they did not manage to get the educational papers that are required to get that job. So this particular company recognized that, but it is also a question. Let me say the company responded. It's also a question that is part of our questionnaires when we request information. And I suppose one can say the lack of response to this particular area is something that we need to scrutinize further as the CGE, because it pretty much for me shows that perhaps many of our respondents are not delving to that area of recognizing prior learning as a way of promoting employees to certain level. I do know that we generally focus on papers, on qualifications, but that is, if anything at this stage, this is a note I'm making in bold so that I do provide feedback to the legal department that we need to also strengthen this. Even when we follow up, we do have information about those who did not respond to our question around recognition of prior learning. In terms of focusing mainly, Honorable Chair, on your input around racism, this again is one of the questions in our questionnaire that we send them. Hence, we have observed in pretty much all the institutions that you have the concentration of either white males or black males in certain areas, the concentration of women in lower areas. And these are also looking at which women, which men. So the statistics where we have the percentages in the presentation would indicate some of those findings. So the issue of race and gender are the biggest systemic hurdle in our strive to transform as a country, because these are the two areas where you find that we are protecting culture, religion, privilege, and so forth. So it's the two, and I'm not implying that issues of disability and LGBTI are not important. They are part of that, because when you talk race and gender, you encompass all these categories. But race in terms of skin color, it's something that it's still difficult for our transformation programs. That links, Honorable Chair, to your question around investigating those institutions that have been previously under apartheid being discriminating legally, I'll put it that way. And definitely outside these reports, and maybe I should say, Honorable Chair, there is another presentation that we have submitted with 226 slides, but that presentation, it's also a transformation in the public and private sector. It reflect different companies, but the findings are pretty much the same as what I have presented. So in that, you will find that we have family-owned businesses, so to speak, that have been in existence for decades, even pre-democracy in South Africa. And you can imagine how protective of that family identity in the business is. Just as a side anecdote, in my work around this area doing research, I have found participants who would just say it in my face: my ancestors built this business for the past 500 years. It was in the family. I'm not just about to bring black people and women and so forth. So that is just an anecdote that we have approached those kinds of institutions, and we're still working with them. The long presentation that I'm talking about have those, one of them, let me not speculate, I don't remember the name specifically, but they are there. We have been deliberately targeting them. The Free State University is one of the universities that we've had follow-up hearings. This is one of the presentations I made to the portfolio on higher education. And again, that picture that I was talking about, that it still reflects the pre-democracy picture. We have found that we have made recommendations. there are some that they are implementing, that there are some that they are not implementing, but it's just that work in progress kind of thing as we keep following up. We have worked with the Department of Basic Education. Maybe this would be an area again where I would need to be updated if we have worked with previously Model C schools. We have many reports in the CGE for the past 25 years, and many things are there. So I don't want to say yes, we did, or no, we didn't. I usually request to say, let me get the facts before we can respond to that. So this would be the third part where I would request Honorable Chair to allow me to get facts and respond in writing. The Honorable Chair also said the one that clarity around sometimes targeting institution on the basis of complaints. That is just one of the ways in which we target institutions. So there is a whole lot of criteria in terms of which institution we pick each year. So the ones that come through complaints, obviously they are, you know, getting our attention. But generally, or if some of them come through media reports and so forth, but some of them are based on our research. In the CGE, we have a legal department, a research department, a public education department as the core departments through which we operationalize our mandate. So the findings of research sometimes inform us where to go and investigate. For instance, there has been studies in different sectors that have that has alerted us to certain institutions that we must look at. So that is just one of the criteria in terms of how we select institutions. Honorable Nonsele inquired about the levels of engagement as we do these investigative hearings. The first request we make when we call for hearings, when we call institutions to appear to us, of course we call the top decision making respondents. It could be a minister, it could be a DG, it could be a CEO, and so forth. But I will hasten to say that often we have run into a challenge, and I think it was pointed out in one of the presentations, where, of course, we call a CEO who is heading Woolworths, for instance, and they send a manager. We usually, the CGE Act gives us a direction in terms of how to respond to that. We can subpoena people when they refuse to appear, or they give us junior staff members who cannot respond to the questions relating to our recommendations. We can, I did say subpoena, we can actually also open a case against, litigate against respondents who blatantly refuse to comply with our recommendations, emphasizing that, you know, the commission is one of the institutions established in terms of Chapter 9 of the Constitution to support the consolidation of democracy and also to support the implementations of our transformation laws. So when institutions don't take us seriously, as you can imagine, sometimes as women, they look at us and say, oh, what can you tell me? We make it known to them that if this doesn't happen, this is the next step we're going to take. And we have done that. A few weeks ago, we were in Mpumalanga having subpoenaed heads of departments and so forth in this regard. So we engage senior people, and we also present, we report to the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. We also present this there. We also table our reports to Parliament generally every year. We also submit our reports to the President. Our Act allows us or requires us to report to the President once a year. This is one area where we still need to improve in terms of availabilities of the relevant stakeholders. Recently, after the report that I mentioned, the IRAP report, the Emergency Response Action Plan of 2018 after the Women's March and the summit, the President's summit that was conducted thereafter, we launched the report in April this year, and we have reported in the relevant oversight structures in Parliament, and recently we submitted a letter to our Portfolio Committee requesting that maybe we should begin to request joint committee meetings so that we report the findings, because the findings were very, very bad. We had achieved about 17% of the targets that were set for the 6 months of the IRAP project. And just perhaps as one of the examples, I remember there is a study that was conducted in the CGE where the police stations were monitored by our research department. Let me say not monitor, but research was done around service delivery for GBVF victims and survivors. And that report, with the findings that we came out with, we were so concerned that we requested to propose to the Portfolio Committee, the Portfolio Committee that deals with issues of safety and security, the police, I don't remember how it is articulated. And we do know that the Portfolio Committee actually called commissioners, police commissioners, to come and account on the findings, and the recommendations were made and some interventions were implemented. So as much as we meet a lot of non-compliance, there are some areas, and this, for me, this is what gives me courage, that our system works where it works. So it shows that it can work if we all, put our efforts together and have the same understanding why this work needs to be done. So there are those kinds of engagements at that level that we do as the CGE. There was an issue, I think it's Honorable Hinana. With regard to churches and traditional institutions, we do work with churches. We do have partnerships with entities that represent churches. Actually, maybe not to deviate, currently there is some engagement that we are going to have with the South African Council of Churches around issues of LGBTI. These are still proposals on the tables. We have a project happening, and through the CRL, the Commission for the Cultural and Religious Rights, we have some activity happening. I'm not sure how it's going to manifest because it's just proposals in place right now. I'm just mentioning it because it's one of those projects that I'm currently experiencing. But I do know that throughout the years, the religious sector has always been involved in the work of the CGE as well as the traditional sector. Actually, I remember when I joined the CGE in November last year, One of the reports I read was the study with the traditional houses, the houses of traditional leadership. There is a report on our website on that, which extensively outlines what is happening and also providing recommendations. And through demand, I think as we plan annually, this may be the area where we want to do follow-up to see how things are happening. But if one were to take from the webinars that we have conducted so far, one would say some of the some of our findings, without necessarily us having followed up, you can find that some of our findings are still prevailing, but some are being addressed slowly. And this is anecdotal because it comes from our webinar interactions with the sector. So the main response is that we do work with these sectors because we are very cognizant that is where patriarchy is reinforced and glorified, if you like, in terms of harmful practices. Actually, as I speak, the chair was in court on, I think it's Monday, on the Amotoso case. There are many other cases. Some of the work that we do is court monitoring, and we are friends of the courts in some of the cases. Some we just we observe just to advise in pertaining to gender justice being realized by those affected in those cases. The issue of rural areas and gender-based violence, I think the main finding around rural populations was relating to procurement in terms of them not getting, you know, say, for instance, the 40% directive that has been issued. You find that that is not happening. And one of the entities did indicate that they've designed a decentralized model of procurement to try and address that. Not all, I think it was just one of the institutions in the presentations. In terms of gender-based violence and femicide, I think this cuts across geographic spaces. I am not aware of any research that says this is prevalent in rural areas versus urban areas. Something with empirical evidence. It might be out there, but this has not been an area where one can confidently say, yes, this is what is happening. Perhaps the issue of traditional practices that we, in our report, as I said, do come out, that you find that in rural areas there are still strong beliefs around some of the harmful traditional practices like ukuthwala and all those kinds of things. Educating men, we have in the CGE a program that we call the Men and Boys Program. And that program, of course, is planned for annually. It's a continuous program because the belief behind that is that when we talk about the gender violations, you cannot address them with just women. Men and women, we exist within the same patriarchal system. And the patriarchal beliefs that we have are not just for men. We all are promoting them, so to speak, because that's the system that formed our mindset. So hence, many times when we present, people will say, yeah, but it's mothers-in-laws who oppress women. So those kinds of dynamics shows you that we all are part of this system. There are disadvantages for men in the patriarchal system. For instance, there is now this issue of toxic masculinities. Excuse me. Just So we are cognizant and we are aware how patriarchy has affected us, and we recognize that some of the practices are harmful to some of us. Some give some people privileges and deny others opportunities. So men and women need to work together to resolve this, because this is not a blaming game. We know that women are suffering in the majority, especially when it comes to gender-based violence and femicide, but also economically. So this is not a problem for women to address. This is a problem for the country to address. This is a problem for justice lovers to address, so to speak. Hence, this program, the Men and Boys program in the CGE, is trying to speak to those kinds of issues. The issue of women not supporting each other, I know the pull head down syndrome. And Honorable Hinana, my response has always been, you know, let me use race. When a white person does something, it's acceptable. We are used to that. White people are clever and all that. And bear with me, I'm using very raw examples here. But when a black person does the same thing, it has a different label that is negative. Same thing with gender. Certain things that are done by men, they don't have labels like pull head down. But when women have their own problems, it becomes something. So from a feminist perspective, that's how we look at it. And we are not saying it's not true, it doesn't happen. It happens. It happens, but all we are saying is it shouldn't be a label for women, because you do have those few women or many women who have issues with other women in leadership positions. That's why we don't even vote for each other. We keep voting for men, because we have those issues. But for me, we had 1956. You had women turn around history in this country, and we should be emulating those women. On one hand, I acknowledge, we educate each other, we encourage each other as women, that we must support each other, and men should support us as well. Because in some of these instances, when you are in a vulnerable position, you are open to be used. And I've seen that live, where someone would like throw a carrot and women will scramble for it. So it's those dynamics that we need to be aware of and also try to address, because these are issues of the mindset, if you like. Honorable Konto asked how frequent we do these reports, the investigative hearings. We do them annually. So we conduct the projects that we conducted in 2020-21 are on our follow-up indicators in 2021-22. And then it goes like that. And then we will drop an institution as we see it progressing. I will make an example with Vodacom. My report presented the findings and recommendations. But with developments as of now, Vodacom has become one of the best practice private institutions when it comes to gender transformation. They are not perfect, but they are more responsive and they are more action oriented. So we only do that annually. In the case where we talked about requesting quarterly report with COGTA, it was because of the context that we were observing when we were doing our investigative hearings with COGTA. In terms of whether they have gender focal points, yes, they do, some don't. I think I had indicated in the presentations that one of the challenges is that these gender focal points are at you know, non-decision making levels, and they are rendered redundant, if you like, where they are put, because they can't make any decision. So they just a tick box to say we have a gender desk. COGTA, as the custodians of tradition, I think this was a comment that the findings from COGTA are worrying, because this is an institution that should be actually in the forefront of breaking harmful traditional practices, if you like. And the question of whether institutions under COGTA are performing better or worse. I see my chairperson has managed to join. Maybe I can leave that question to her. Thank you, Chair. Because yes, she does have some historical memory on some of these issues. So I will quickly go to Honorable Bertram. I hope I'm pronouncing your name accurately, Honorable. My apologies if I'm not. The issue of the percentage when it comes to disability targets. Yes, there has been a very a compelling debate in the country. Initially, we had a target of 1%, and that because that's how the statistics reflected in terms of persons with disability. But the concept of disability was expanded in terms of definition, and obviously that gives us, that broadened the scope. Last I heard it was somewhere just over 7%. And therefore the target was increased to 3%. But my experience has been that a lot of institutions are still sticking to 1% and not even achieving that 1%. So we still have a lot of work to do in that area, from even having the common understanding of the population of persons with disability in the country. The issue of the public sector doing the private sector doing better than the public sector, I think that were comments, but a question there I think arose in terms of how we are dealing, differentiating targets, for instance, reaching small businesses like your spaza shops. May I also defer that question to the chair. I think these are the notes. Oh, there was an issue, Honorable Bertram, around the shrinking workforce and how is that mitigated. That is $22 million question, given the scourge of COVID and how it affects workforces. We know that the unemployment rate has shot up, and I think this as a country is something that requires efforts from every corner of this country. As the Commission for Gender Equality, who is a watchdog to report on how we are performing as a country, I think we can only bring out the picture of what is happening, and then implementing entities being given recommendation to operationalize these problem areas until we begin to move faster towards leaving no one behind, so to speak. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I don't know whether that your chair has joined, whether she would like to have some few comments or responses. Is she still in?
Yes, her hand is up. I think she's
okay. She may. You may come in, ma'am, and respond.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I would like to switch off my video because I am currently sitting in a public place. We have electricity issues in our areas. I'll try to be as brief as I can, Chair. So with your permission, I will switch off my video. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson from and honorable members, Honorable Whip, I just want to send greetings from CGE. Again, I just want to respond to the questions that I managed to hear as I joined and as I kept on, you know, going off and on this meeting. And just to clarify very quickly on areas where perhaps CEO could not clearly clarify and provide history. Quickly, Chair, on the issue of the Commission for Gender Equality, I think there was a specific question that you asked whether we conducted these investigations based on complaints only. I just want to respond to that question, Honorable Chair, and inform you that we also conducted these investigations on institutions of higher learning based on the disturbing media reports that we that came to our attention. Honorable Chair, you will remember had a few years ago, we had a big issue around the treatment or the sexual harassment of female students at the Rhodes University. That did not end there, Honorable Chairperson. It was all over the media. We also had an issue of sexual harassment at the University of Pretoria, where students took to the streets the issue of sexual harassment in the campus, in the campuses. And I want to say that that actually led us to look more into the university's situations, issues of safety and security within the university over and above looking at issues of gender transformation and gender equality within university. Honorable Chair, and you will remember that we are also broadly looking at the status of safety and security of students outside the university campuses. And you will remember that currently with the University of Cape Town, we have an issue of Uinene Mkhwetyana, Unosicelo Mthebeni, the final law students at the University of Fort Hare. These are the issues that we are now currently raising with the minister, and the deputy minister of higher education has actually asked CGE to come and assist us, assist them to develop what we call a safety guidelines. And these guidelines are looking at issues of safety and security and how to deal with sexual harassment, ensuring gender equality within the universities. And these were launched 2 months ago, Honorable Chair. So I think our interventions are quite broader than just looking at transformation, Madam Chair. The second question, Madam Chair, that I just want to talk about quickly is that the Commission for Gender Equality, I know that you asked a question about, you know, second clarity on the use of the legislation, the basic conditions of employment, the triple BEE. And I just wanted to say that in order to elevate issues of racism, gender equality in institutions, the Commission has actually decided to use these legislations regulating not only transformation, but employment equity in South Africa. And these, we know that they, you know, start from Employment Equity Act number 55 of 1996, the triple BEE, all of these were used by the Commission for Gender Equality as a guiding yardstick in the analysis of the policies and practices adapted and adopted by the tertiary institutions, companies, private companies, as well as public sector. However, Madam Chair, you will find that we found that there is non-compliance from these legislations due to the fact that the non-alignment or the alignment to these legislations and the laws is the alignment to the older laws. And if I say older laws, Madam Chair, I want to indicate that one of the laws that we realized was used, and it was an old law, was the sexual harassment policy that is used by all the institutions that still refers to the 1997 Code of Good Practice instead of the 2005 Code of Good Practice. And the Commission for Gender Equality is working closely with institutions of higher learning, private companies and public sector in terms of correcting some of the laws as well as correcting these policies so that they are able to align with the current legislations that were adopted after 1996. Honorable Chair, I think another question basically was around racism.
Your chair has been okay.
Oh,
we lost sorry. You.
Am I audible, ma'am?
Yes, we are. You are audible, but we lost you for some few seconds.
Madam Chair, the issue of racism. I know that CEO has spoken to it. In addressing issues of racism, we are also working closely with the South African Human Rights Commission. That is a commission that is mandated to look at issues of addressing issues of human rights and issues of racism, xenophobia, as well as other issues fall squarely under their mandate. So we have recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the South African Human Rights Commission so that if we are able to have findings of issues of serious racism and or minor racism in the institutions that we are currently dealing with, when we look at gender transformation, we are then able to work closely with the South African Human Rights Commission. Another issue, Chair, that I want to just quickly refer to is that I think Honorable Mcebisi Nonsele asked about whether we are able to escalate or elevate issues that we find, including not only findings, but the recommendations that are coming from the institutions that we have subpoenaed. I want to say, yes, we do make follow-ups and we do write to the ministers and we also present the reports to the ministers and the DGs. And those reports that we submit to them will not be preliminary reports, but they will be final reports with recommendations that are binding. And we have what we call high-level meetings with the ministers. And if I can make an example very quickly, we had a meeting with the Minister of Health, for an example, where our report on forced sterilization was tabled at that level. We are currently having other high-level meetings with the ministers of institutions as well as the CEOs of private companies so that we can address these issues with them. And we are also elevating these areas with relevant portfolio committees, and I think as we do today as per invite. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The third layer of my response, Chair, is around whether we have worked with this Model C schools. Honorable Chair, I must say that we haven't worked with Model C schools per se, but I think based on our limited funding, small budget, that we all know that the Commission for Gender Equality receives a very small budget, what we have done is to actually take our work in palatable chunks. What we have started to do was to take the first universities, we take them in 3 or 4 or 5 per year, and we do the investigations, we subpoena them, and we write reports. We have done this over years. We are now, we have covered a total of 22 universities out of 26 universities. We have now moved to the TVET colleges, and we have taken 4 TVET colleges, and we are looking at gender transformation in those TVET colleges. We haven't looked at the model fee schools. However, we do work with Department of Basic Education on issues of sexual harassment, teenage learner pregnancy, and we have had several meetings with the ministers or deputy minister at that level. We have had meetings with FACE, and these meetings basically were the meetings that were looking at issues of sexual harassment cases, learner pregnancy cases that we have that have been reported. And we have also looked at how many cases have been registered, cases of sexual harassment, bullying in the school premises and outside. And we are also looking at how many cases have been dealt with and how many cases have been finalized, what were the outcomes of those cases, how many and why not concluded, and so that we can move with SAFE and the department in terms of making recommendations on moving fast in terms of finalizing those cases. I think in the issue of looking at Model C schools, Honorable Chair, is something that I think as CGE, we will have to sit down and look at our next PP and look at whether we can't really have a focus on that, because I fully understand where the Honorable Chair comes from. And we appreciate that input, Chair. I think last but not least from me, Chair, I just want to indicate that some of the questions that have been raised, I think we will be able to respond to them in writing and send to the Portfolio Committee, Chair. And I must apologize for the interrupted way of my intervention as well as participation to your meeting, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Members, those are the responses. We will then get a written one, and would appreciate if you can do that, so that when we resume our duties and responsibilities next year, we will get those, because you are one of the institutions that will, I think, personally will really assist us in this struggle of transformation, because it is quite a very challenging a struggle, and which we will have to wage without being apologetic and fear of any contradiction. But thank you very much. We will see you. Maybe again next year when we will call you if there is a need, but feel free, as you have done, and even I think we will record your present empowering. And please don't look at Ms. Jamela, so that we are then going to deal with our own committee matters. Thank you very much. You are released.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues. Thanks. Bye.
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 I think they are out now. Members within, remember that last week we were dealing with sets of minutes, and Mr. Sakaza did say that he will other minutes get them before we come to the meeting. Honor, Mr. Sakaza, can you please?
Yes, the minutes of the Friday, 26th November, are on screen now, Chair. Can you see?
Yes, I can see them. Okay, take us through. Those were the attendees to the meeting. Okay. Page 2. Thank you. Those are the minutes of the 26th of November. Can we get a formal mover? Can we get a formal mover, honorable members?
Yes. Good morning, honorable chair, honorable members. Honorable Sibongile Zuma, I formally move the minutes of the 26th November 2021. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable Zuma. Can we get a seconder?
Yes, sir.
Yes, honorable Nontsele.
Honorable Nontsele, I formally second the motion moved by Honorable Sibongile Zuma for the adoption of the minutes as stated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. Mr. Sakaza.
Yes, Chair, the draft minutes of Wednesday, 1 December, are on screen, Chair.
Yes, take us through. That's page 1, which is attendees. Okay. Thank you very much. Remember, those are the minutes of our meeting where we're adopting the set of minutes as it is presented to us. Can we get a formal mover?
Chairperson, I hereby move for the minutes to be accepted and adopted.
Thank you, Honorable Volmanas. Can we get a seconder? Can we get
Honorable
a seconder? Honorable Nontsele.
I'm next, Nontsele, formally second the motion moved by Honorable Volmanas for the adoption of the minutes dated 1st December 2021. So I move, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. The other issue, honorable members, before we adjourn, that I thought that it would be important that I reflect on it, is that we'll remember the unfortunate situation of our first sitting of the portfolio committee, where the report on BRRR was circulated less than 24 hours before the day of the meeting. And then there was a motion that the chair must look into that and come and report to the committee, which that the chair did, I called a meeting of the committee section with the manager and reflected on that challenge. The committee section to its secretary apologized of the misunderstanding, and the chair put across to the meeting of the staff that is not going to happen again. It is not going to happen again. If then it happens, they know what are then the consequences of that. So that is number one. Number two, the issue about code link. Members must remember that bill was tabled. The amendments were tabled in the House, and the House adopted that, and it was then said, it was then now it's in the, what is this, in the Council of National Council of Provinces. If then there is any stakeholder that may have a problem on what an entity or the department is doing, what will then be a correct thing to do? It is then, because the NCOP will also have its own process of calling for public hearings, either written or oral. But for us now, it won't be correct for us to indulge on that, except to allow that process. It will then, when it comes back to us, because when it comes back to us, NCOP will then reflect on what they think, if I can quote unquote, an anomaly or a challenge or whatever, by ever, whether by ourselves or by the department or something that has been raised by a stakeholder, then it will then come back. Then we'll then have a second bite on how then we will then look into that. I thought that it will then be important for the chair to reflect on that, so that we have that understanding, because the act has not been yet, the amendments have not yet been enacted by the president. They are still in the process, but they are in the NCOP as we speak. So we will wait for that process, and we'll advise the stakeholder that has raised some comments or concerns to then look into that. I think the committee section will then have to assist. They have to look, monitor that, so that when then that process of public hearings is then advertised by the NCOP, then they are able again, because there is nothing wrong, nothing preventing them from raising that in those processes of the NCOP. I thought it's important that I raise that to members. Having said that, this is our last meeting for the year.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Nonsele.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for the disruption. Chair, I thought that it would be appropriate for us as a meeting to welcome your report, particularly on the first item that we have committed to act speedily on the matter. And that therefore, now that you have reported, I move formally that the meeting accept your report, and that the matter is now, should be considered now as being closed. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Nonsele, thank you. Any person who is seconding? Any member?
Mm. I hear a second that matter, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Volmenas. Honourable Members, we will then be in the next year. There are issues that I think, in particular as the Office of the Chair and the committee and the committee section, we'll then just have a glance of some of the challenging issues, the issues that matters that we have recommended to the department in terms of all our reports, the RRR, our oversight visit and whatever. But we must again brace ourselves that we'll then have again quite a heavy and a challenging year. And I think what we will do, and I hope the PLO is still in the meeting, I think what we will do first, and this must be noted by the committee section and members, that what we will really do first so that we deal with this thing, because there's quite a lot, I don't want to say a confusion or a misunderstanding of really what then is the mandate, this added mandate of the department. And therefore, as the chair, I think it would be very important, Mr. Wababa, that you'll have to take this to the attention of the ministry, that this issue of employment, what is it entailed really? What is in this mandate? Because the view outside there is that this department has got a responsibility to create employment. And personally, as an activist and as a member of the African National Congress deployed to chair this committee, that would not be my understanding. My understanding, until we are told otherwise, I'm told otherwise, that its responsibility is to create a conducive environment. Because I can imagine if then that is expected from the Employment and Labour Act. And therefore, Mr. Wababa, it will be very important now more than before, because the high rate of unemployment is alarming, and the expectations in the country by its citizenry is that there is a department that is to ensure that there is employment, or that is to employ. So the minister must really come and take us through so that we've got that understanding. But I thought I was then going to be physical and join those that are physical, but circumstances beyond my control. But let's take care, enjoy our festive season, take care, service our constituencies, and until we meet again, those that have not vaccinated yet must do that and encourage their families to go and vaccinate. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, and thanking you for being tolerant of me, and I also thank you for the leadership that you have also provided to the Office of the Chairperson. Thank you very much. Until we meet again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have a wonderful Christmas and a safe time. Drive carefully.
You're still owing me.
I do owe you. It's becoming bigger and bigger, the owing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, good, enjoy. Good luck and happy Christmas to everyone. And everyone must take care of him or myself. Thank you very much.
On the 15th is my birthday. On my 15th. Mr. Pegram, on the 15th of December is my birthday. I will need that parcel from the postman that you owe me on the 15th.
The birthday of MK as well.
Really? Yes. Okay. Thanks. Bye.
good day, guys. Take care.
I will. We will. Okay.